is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
The two things that we're big on here is tough and together. We feel like if you're the toughest group and your most together group, that you can do some special things. And so the upperclassmen here, that's what they instill in the young guys, and they just move the baton, and each class kind of takes that on.
Dominic Parker is in his first year as the assistant head coach at Christopher Newport University. He previously coached two seasons at CNU from 2017 to 2019, and for the last three seasons was an assistant coach at Guilford College in Greensboro, North Carolina. Parker spent 1 year as an assistant coach at the University of Maryland Eastern Shore after leaving Christopher Newport in 2019. He originally came to CNU following two seasons assisting the Shenandoah University men's basketball program. He began his coaching career at Virginia State as a graduate assistant in the 2012-2013 season and later assisted the program at Richard Bland College from 2013 to 2015.
Hey, Hoopheads, find the perfect shooting machine for your team during Dr. Dish Basketball's Fall in Love with More Reps sale. Now until February 29th, choose between two major offers, $2,000 off a Dr. Dish CT Plus and free shipping, or $6,500 off two Rebel Pluses. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
This is Kip Ione, founder of Teams of Men, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Grab pen and paper before you listen to this episode with Dominic Parker, assistant head coach at Christopher Newport University. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are pleased to be joined by Dominic Parker, men's basketball assistant coach at Christopher Newport University. Dom, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Thanks for having me, man. This is, I'm an active listener, so I'm definitely excited to be a part of it.
We are thrilled to be able to have you on. Looking forward to chatting with you about all the things that you've been able to do thus far in your career. Let's start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell us a little bit about how you got into the game of basketball when you were younger. What made you fall in love with the game?
Yeah, that's a good question. So my father, he was a big basketball fan. He also played himself. So he really got me into it. He would take me to the gym with him when he was playing. And I would sit on the side and I would watch him playing with the adults. And, I became obsessed with it. And I joke about it now with him, but, he would trick me. He would say, he was basically trying to get me to just kind of go somewhere and not mess with anybody. But he would say, hey, look, I'll give you $10 if you make 10 in a row. I'm five at the time. So I'm just going over there and I'm trying my hardest. I got to get this $10. But, but him doing that, I fell in love with it. And I owe it to him. I mean, he's a big part of my development, and he's really got me started with basketball.
When you think back to the influence that your dad had on you throughout your basketball career, if you could boil it down to one or two key things that you learned from him as a young kid, and again, you could take that all the way up through your high school career, but anything that you learned from your dad that sticks out that still is a part of who you are today?
Yeah, I think it goes back to, when I started playing, I wasn't the best, You know, so he would be in a, we would be in a garage, and we would have cones, and we would dribble, and we would go through different drills. I would dribble between my legs, and he would show me all this stuff. And one thing that he really instilled in me was to never give up, no matter what. And I still do that to this day, you know. And, you know, I remember this. It's a, you know, I was talking to him today about this, but seventh grade in North Carolina, where I'm from, seventh grade is when you can play, you know, try out for sports for your school. You know, so I played AAU basketball. I played with Garner Road. You know, we had a pretty good team. So I get to seventh grade. I'm trying out for the team. You know, I thought I had a pretty good tryout, and, you know, I felt good about it. And my dad, you know, they, you know, back in the day, they put the list of the players that made the team, and I was not on it. And it's funny because he had two letters. He had a letter if I made the team, and he had a letter if I didn't make the team. So when he drives up, he sees him crying, and he gave up the other letter, and that letter said, never give up. And that's something that sticks with me to this day. And no matter what happens in my life, you know, the ups and downs, you know, I'm never going to give up. And that's something that he's instilled in me. And that seventh grade year, I made a promise to myself. I said, you know what? I'm never going to feel like this again. And I can honestly say I didn't get cut again. So.
So how'd you work on your game as a middle school, high school player? What did you do to get better?
So my biggest development is when I got cut that seventh grade year. I took it very personal. Now, all my buddies made the team, and all my AAU teammates was on their middle school teams. So I just got missing. You know, I would dribble the basketball around my neighborhood with my left hand. I'm right-handed. So like that whole season, I was just dribbling anywhere I went. I would dribble. And then also too, I didn't make the team. So I would just go to the gym on my own, and just my imagination. You know, I would do 3-2-1. That's like you kind of, you know, shot clock goes down and you just shooting shots. And I would just put myself in different scenarios, and I would just, that imagination I had for it. And honestly, that was probably the biggest development, because I was in love with the game, but also too, the creativity and the will and the passion for it really went up too. And like I said, I made a promise to myself that said I would never get cut again. And I just worked hard, continued to work hard. And, you know, eighth grade came around, I made the team, I was starting, leading score, and I kept, you know, kept doing what I had to do. So
what's your favorite memory from playing high school basketball?
Favorite memory. So cool thing with me, I have a unique little story. I played at Ravenscroft School, and at the time, we was nationally ranked. I played alongside with Ryan Kelly, who went to Duke, and he got drafted to the Lakers. So we was ranked top 25 in the country. I also had another teammate. His name's Justin Bradley, he's the assistant coach at Loyola Chicago. So we had a really good team. And my best memory is we played Word of God. Word of God at the time was ranked top 5 in the country. They had John Wall, you know, who's number one player, got drafted Kentucky. He had CJ Leslie, who was a McDonald's All-American, Dez Wells, all these great players. And I probably had my best game in high school ever. I mean, you had Coach K in the crowd. You had Sidney Lowe, who was a coach at NC State, in the crowd. And, you know, I wasn't that good, but that night, I mean, I probably had like, you know, I scored probably 17, 18 points, had 8-9 assists. Had a really good game. And, you know, I wasn't that good to play on that level, but those coaches, they all came up to me and said, Dom, like, man, you was phenomenal. Like, you know, you, whoever gets you, you're going to have, they're going to be very lucky. So in high school, that's probably my one of my best memories. And it's something I worked up to. You know, I worked super hard, and I worked up to that moment. And, you know, my senior year, I was hoping that we could, you know, make it to the state championship, but we lost in the Final Four. We played the Plumlee brothers. Was at Christ School, so the Plumlee brothers. It was a boarding school, so they had all these guys from all over the country. You know, so all the teams were like, man, you know, it's not fair, but you know, we lost to them. And
but it was welcome to high school basketball, especially today, right?
Man, exactly.
It's crazy the way high school basketball is today.
It is, and that was, you know, I got a taste of it, but. you know, I had a really good high school career. I scored, I think, 1,500 points, you know, won some games, you know, and ultimately I got a scholarship, which was a big goal of mine and my family. So it was good. I had a really good high school experience.
What was that process like in terms of the recruitment? And how do you use that at all when you think about when you have conversations with players that you're recruiting now? Do you use your story at all toward it, sort of to talk to them? Or just tell me a little bit about your recruitment.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing about me, I was in high school, I was probably 6 foot, 6'1", like 140 pounds. I was really quick. I was very quick. I could shoot. And, you know, I wasn't strong, but I was fast. So all these coaches would come see me play. They really liked me, but they just said, I don't know if you could take, you know, the Division I beating. You know, I wanted to play Division I basketball, you know. So I had some schools recruiting me. You know, James Madison was recruiting me, South Carolina State, North Carolina Central. I've had some schools, High Point University. You know, I had a bunch of schools, but nobody pulled the trigger. So what happened was later in my senior year, Coach Josh Schertz, he's the coach at Indiana State right now. At the time, Josh Schertz was a coach. He was an associate head coach at High Point. So he came down and, you know, we had a really good team. So we had a couple 6'11 kids on our team. And he would come down and watch work out. And he saw me play, you know. And at the time, he didn't think I was big enough. So the cool thing was that summer, you know, I'm still available. He took a Division II job. Lincoln Memorial in Tennessee. And he got the job. And I think he said I was the second or third person that he called. He said, Dom, I saw you at High Point. You know, I just didn't think you was big enough. But, you know, I took this Division II job. It's in Tennessee. I would love to recruit you. I would love to have you. You know, can you come on a visit? And at the time, I'm like, okay, yeah. You know, because I remember Coach Church, like, yeah, he's a cool dude. So, me and my family, we went up to Tennessee. And one thing about Lincoln Memorial, it's in Harrogate, Tennessee. There's nothing there, but there's this beautiful basketball gym. So I get on campus, we go to the gym, and I'm like, I'm in awe. I'm like, wow, like this is unbelievable. And I went to it was a couple other guys on their visits, and I went in the office with Coach Schertz, and he sat me down. He said, this is my first year, you know, as a head coach. And, you know, I think I'm recruiting some good players. And It was unique for me because I was used to scoring. Like I feel like I was a good scorer in high school. And he started off the conversation. He said, well, you scored a lot of points, 1,500 points in high school. That's pretty good. He said, I don't need you to do that here. So I'm looking like, you know, and he said, man, and he basically showed me these two other guys, these two big guys. He said, that your quickness and your shooting ability, like when the shot clock gets low, I'll let you do your thing. But I want you to get the ball to these guys. And, it was funny at the time. And me and Coach Schertz, we still talk about it to this day a little bit. But he was very real. And I think that's something that I've taken with me as a coach is, you know, he was very honest. He was very upfront. He didn't tell me what I wanted to hear. He told me, he said, look, man, I see you in this role, that you could be good in this role. And you know, the spot's yours if you want it. You know, I went back home, talked it over with my family. And you know, I thought that was the right move. So That's what I did. I committed. I signed at Lincoln Memorial, and I was there, and that's how the college story started.
So when you go to college, are you at all thinking at this point that coaching is something that you might want to do, or are you still just completely 100% focused on I'm a basketball player, or had coaching sort of at least enter your consciousness at this point?
So you know, back up a little bit. So my high school coach, his name is Kevin Billerman. He played at Duke. He was a longtime college coach himself. And I loved the confidence that he instilled in me. And I was just like, dang, that wouldn't be bad being a coach, you know, but it never really crossed my mind. So I got to college and I really wanted to be a physical therapist. So I took all these prerequisites to be a physical therapist. And you know, just to piggyback off that. So I was at Lincoln Memorial. We had a pretty good, my freshman year, I was pretty good. I got freshman of the week twice, played. I started probably 4 or 5 games. And in my sophomore year, it had some adversity happen. So my mother got diagnosed with cancer. And so Coach Schertz, when he recruited me, he knew I was a big family guy. And, you know, I was from Raleigh, North Carolina. Harrogate, Tennessee is probably 7, almost 8 hours away. And we just didn't know what was going to happen. So at the end of that season, Coach Schertz, he said, man, he said, Dom, like, you know, you've gotten so much better, but I know you're a big family guy. Let me help you transfer to be closer to home. I was so thankful for that. And, you know, I didn't want to leave. I got so much better as a basketball player. I got close with my teammates, but Coach Schertz helped me. I transferred to Virginia State, which is a HBCU school in the CIAA in Petersburg, Virginia, which is an hour and 45 minutes from home. And it's funny now because just thinking about it. So my junior year, I transferred to Virginia State, and we got the record there for the most losses in a row that year. We lost 13 in a row. Wow. And, you know, the crazy thing that happened, that we had practice. It was a day like today. We had practice. We had an early morning practice because my coach, Coach White, had to go recruit that night. And the AD called me, and I'm like, whoa, you know, like, I didn't do anything. So she, long story short, they let him go in the middle of the season.
Wow.
So in the middle of my junior year season, I mean, I think we only won like 4 games that year. And, but it was good that I went through that as a player, because as a coach, I see all the characteristics of a team that has the potential to be a losing team. And I'm sure we'll probably talk a little bit more about it, but looking on my journey, you know, that was big to kind of see, you know, like, okay, wow. Like, you know, and it was totally opposite of when I was at LMU. Like LMU, like, we was always in the gym, you know, it was just a winning program. And then I went to Virginia State, and at the time it was a losing program. And going through that, and, you know, we got a new coach end of my junior year, a guy named Darryl Jacobs. And my senior year was a little better, but, you know, still he was trying to rebuild the culture. And the unique thing about Coach Jacobs is, you know, like I said, I took all these classes because I wanted to be a physical therapist. I wanted to go to VCU and be a physical therapist. So I applied. I did all these prerequisites, and I got put on a waiting list. So Coach Jacobs, basically, he asked me, he said, what's your backup plan? And I was like, Coach, I don't really have one. He said, yeah. Well, you know, how about this? You know, what if you get in a grad program here and be a grad assistant under me? And I was just like, nah, Coach, like, I'm not, you know, I don't know if I want to coach. I want to be a physical therapist. So with that being said, I got in a program and I said, you know what, I'm going to do it for a semester. And, you know, hopefully I get taken off the waiting list and I go to PT school. I never got taken off the waiting list. And that 1 year of being a grad assistant, it was challenging because I went from playing with guys to now coaching them.
Right.
But the unique thing about it is, you know, how guys are like, the coach don't know what he's talking about. I could articulate it in a way that they could understand, but also kind of back my head coach. So like he made me in charge of a lot of the workouts, because the guys that we had at the time, like, they, you know, they would work out hard for me.
Right.
I guess because I don't know. They saw me as a player, I guess. I don't know. So like he made me be in charge of the workouts. I did all the miscellaneous stuff. I washed clothes. I was in charge of film exchange. And, you know, I did all, you know, I would get the food on the road and post game meals. And I'm just doing it just because, you know, like, you know, I'm just doing my job, you know. And I mean, I didn't know that, you know, 13 years later that coaching would kind of be my path and kind of my passion. But that was my first, like, really true look at it. And I'm so glad he gave me a lot of responsibilities, because, I mean, I took that on and later, you know, I got other jobs and that was really key. So that grad assistant year was very key, and it really made me fall in love with the college game, to see kind of everything that they had to do, you know. And as a player, I never really understood that. I just, you know, I would go to practice, I would work out, and that was it. But I didn't know, the ins and outs of it and how tedious you had to be with certain things, you know, just monitoring practice and, you know, the weight room and athletic training room, making sure guys getting treatment. Like it's, you know, it's tough.
How long into that year were you before you really started to think, hey, man, I could do this as a profession? Was it something that you knew right away? Did it take to that first semester? Just when did you realize, like, hey, I think I could make a career of this?
So what happened was, you know, the program that I was in was a 2-year program. So you take 36 credit hours, you know, you break it off in 2 years. So, like I said, my college assistant coach, my junior year, I mean, they let go of my head coach, so they let go of the assistant coach. My assistant coach, his name is Donald Payton. He reached out to me one day. He said, Dom, like, I see you, you know, you're being a grad assistant over at Virginia State. He said, man, like, if coaching is something that you want to, like, do, I think I can get you a job at the place I'm at. And at the time, he was at Richard Bland College. He said, but you got to have your master's. So I'm like, okay. Like, and at the time, I was falling in love with the college coaching. So I said, okay. So what I did is I went to the dean of my major and I asked her, I said, hey, I have a job opportunity, but I got to do this program in a year. And so she approved it. And, you know, long story short, I did the program in a year. I got my master's.
What was that like, man, doing double duty classes and trying to coach? And did you ever sleep?
I didn't sleep. I did not sleep. And the cool thing about it is I also was a teaching assistant. So I was a teaching assistant for the dean of the major. So like she would see like that I was tired. She said, just go home. Just do this work from home and just come in the morning. So that was big. If it wasn't for that, like, I don't know how I would have did it. But I think that first semester I took 15 credit hours in grad school. And then that second semester I took 18.
Holy cow.
I took 18. I mean, I've never wrote so many papers and research projects and all that stuff. And then that summer I took a 3-credit class and I did the 36 credit hours in basically a year in a summer session. And that led to me. And then, you know, I got a job at Richard Bland College, which was down the road from Virginia State. Richard Bland at the time was a NJCAA Division II school. And there was a guy, his name is Chuck Moore. And I tell people this all the time too, like he told me in the interview, he was very honest with me and I respect that. He said, man, you're my second choice. He's like, you know, the guy I really want, you know, he has a better job and, you know, he said, you're my second choice. So with him telling me that, I'm so glad he did because, you know, it goes back to that seventh grade of getting cut and just like, okay, like I almost didn't make it, you know, like I got my shot.
It'll prove it mentality, right?
A prove it mentality. So basically, you know, I went to Richard Bland College and the junior college game was different then because Virginia State was Division II. So I learned the junior college, you only got these guys for 2 years and something got, you know, I was 23 years old. And, you know, I was an assistant basketball coach. I taught classes at the college and I was in charge of intramurals. I was the director of intramurals at the college. So I had three job titles in one.
And that was not like you were taking it easy, man, after trying to get a master's and a bachelor's degree in 1 year, man. You were going through, you're like, this is smooth sailing. Three jobs, it's like nothing.
Three jobs. So, you know, my first year at Richard Bland, you know, it was a first year program and we took it to new heights. I mean, we finished the season, I think it was 24-4. We got ranked as high as number one in the country. We lost in the, I think we lost in the conference championship game. And in JUCO at the time, you got to win your conference tournament to go to the national tournament. So that first year we didn't make it, but we had some really good players. We had some really confident players and they taught me too. Like, you know, we would be in practice and they was they was very together and they would say, coach, like we could beat teams in the NEC. I'm like, man, come on, man. No, y'all can't, man. Like he said, we would win the MEAC right now. I'm like, come on. Like y'all, no, we wouldn't. But anyway, you know, all those guys came back And the cool thing that we did that summer is we brought all those guys to summer school. And, you know, they got a class under their belt and they got a chance to kind of, you know, hang out in the summertime. And that following year, we won the conference tournament. So we went to the national tournament and I'm a young coach. I'm still learning and I'm trying to do all this stuff. And we ultimately won the national championship that year. We finished that season 32-4. And, you know, we had 13 players. We had three of them go Division I and the rest of them went Division II. So I was in talks with a lot of coaches that I keep in contact today. And that was really key in terms of the networking piece of coaching. It's just like it was a lot of guys who, you know, they was reaching out to me. And at the time thinking like, you know, these are my guys, you know, we're close. And then, you know, I win that national championship. And then ultimately that winning that national championship, you know, like I said, I was working three jobs. So like I was tired. Year two, I was tired and I wanted to get back to the NCAA level. And, you know, a job opened at Shenandoah College, Shenandoah University. And the job opened there. I applied. I went up and interviewed and I got it and I left. And then the crazy thing about it is all those guys that I was, you know, in talks with, I didn't hear from them anymore. But then I learned, it was a big learning point in the business is, you know, those guys was keeping in contact with me because I had access to some good players that could help their program.
Yep. Yep.
You know, so that was a lesson, you know, for a young coach like myself. I was, you know, I'm thinking too at the time, I'm thinking I'm just this great coach. You know, I'm like, man, my second year coaching, like I won a national title, like. You know, I just thought that like I was the man. So, you know, I go to Shenandoah University and I get a job with Rob Pryor, a great friend of mine to this day, a great coach. So we go to Shenandoah and it's in a rebuilding phase, you know. So my first year at Shenandoah, we went, you know, I didn't bring anybody in because I got the job kind of in the summertime, it was a little later. And but we first year we win six games. You know, and it reminded me of kind of my junior year in college, just like just trying to build the culture up and get it to where it needed to go. You know, so that's first year we won six games. Guys play hard. We just wasn't talented enough. So that summer, you know, and that year, I mean, I hit the recruiting trail really hard and I brought in some really good transfers. I brought in some all-state freshmen and we, you know, that second year we turned the table around, you know, and I think we end up winning. I think we won 12 games that season, so we doubled it. And at the end of that season, the unique thing about it is, my head coach, they let go of my head coach. So that was this is another teaching point that I had in my coaching career is just, you know, like when the head coach got let go, I got let go.
Yep.
So, you know, just trying to figure it out. And, you know, I go from, you know, grad assistant to JUCO national champion to ultimately, you know, being removed from my position. And, I mean, that was tough. It was tough. But the one thing I will say, you know, that hard working piece that I have, you know, I would recruit every other weekend if I could. Anytime I could get out to recruit, I would go recruit. I would go recruit, recruit, recruit. So I got a good rapport with a lot of other coaches. And one of a good friend of mine, Jared Dyson, at the time, he was coaching at Christopher Newport. And I would see him all the time. Like, anywhere he went, I was there. And we became good friends. And, you know, so, you know, I was at Shenandoah. You know, I got let go. And then, you know, I went back home to try to figure it out. And then, you know, my buddy JD called me. He said, "Hey, man, you know, I think I might get a D1 assistant job. Would you replace me at Christopher Newport?" And at the time, I didn't know much about CNU. You know, I just know all the kids I was recruiting was going there. All the kids I really wanted was going to Christopher Newport. And I'm like, you know, I'm getting mad. I'm a competitor. I'm like, why are they going to CNU? Why are they going? Like, so, you know, so JD, you know, he referred me to Coach K. And so I come down to Christopher Newport and to talk with him. And I see the campus and how beautiful it is. And I said, okay, I get it. I understand why these kids are going here. I mean, it's a world-class institution. It's a beautiful campus. And so ultimately, you know, I go through the process and Coach K offers me the job at Christopher Newport. So, you know, I go to Christopher Newport and, you know, there was, you know, Coach K is, you know, he's a very good coach. I mean, as y'all know, he won a national championship last year. Yep. And he has taught me a lot about the game of basketball. And he made me look at the time, my first stint at CNU, he made me look at the game in ways that I never thought of. And it made me a better coach.
So what's an example? What's an example of that? When you say he made you look at the game a little bit differently, what are some ways that he approached it that maybe you hadn't seen or thought of before?
So one thing that he did for me at the time is, you know, we would look at different actions that teams would run, and he would say, like, this could give us some issues. I'm like, why, coach? But he said, okay, we guard it like this, and we're going to go under this. So he made me look at, like, okay, yeah, we are going to guard it like this. So, and it made me look at the little details of, like, these plays that teams was running. You know, one thing about Coach K, he's a defensive guru. And, you know, if you give him a week to prepare for you, you're in trouble. So what he did was, what we would do is we would come in the office and we would watch three or four games, and we would dissect the teams that we would play against. And I mean, going into the game, we would have a plan A, B, C, D, all the way to Z. Like, you know, so when the game comes, like, we already know as a staff, like, what we're going to see, how we're going to attack these things. And, like, the game, like, was already played in our minds. So, like, if we saw something, we already knew what our counter was going to be. And he really helped me see the game in another light that I've never looked at it before, you know. And as a player, you know, I was pretty good. I was talented. I never looked at the game like that.
Yeah, neither did I. I always say that, man. There's some guys that look at it when they're playing. They look at it as coaches. When I was playing, I never, ever, ever looked at the game from a coaching perspective. I just was always focused on what's my job, what do I have to do, how do I help my teammates, how do we win this game. But I always looked at it from a player perspective. I never really thought about it from a coaching perspective at all.
Yeah. Yeah. He and to this day, like, you know, it's, I still look at it like that. Like, I can't even watch basketball. I can't even watch a regular game because I'm looking at, oh, what are they running?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah,
like,
right.
He went under that screen. Like, if he, you know, it's just kind of instilled and ingrained in me now. And it was pretty cool when I got on here at Christopher Newport. He offered me the job and he said, do you have your passport? Coach Tate said, you have your passport. And I said, no, coach, I've never been out of the country. He said, well, we're going to Europe next week. You know, you got to get it. So I had to drive up to D.C. and get a passport expedited. And that was a great experience. I mean, my first week on the job, I'm in Belgium, Europe. You know, the team, we had three games over there. We was over there for, I think, 11 days. And we went to Paris, we went to Amsterdam, we went to so many places. And I mean, to this day, man, it's like I've been out of the country twice, and that was one of the times I went. So just being able to see that and experience that. And at the time, the guys that we had, they bonded so much on that foreign trip. You know, I was a new coach to them, so I was getting to know them and also getting to know Coach K and other guys on the staff. And that first season, we had a player named Marcus Carter. He messed his knee up, so he redshirted that year. I mean, he was an All-American his sophomore year. But we was young, and we had another kid named Aaron McFarlane who that year became an All-American. But my first year at Christopher Newport, we finished, I want to say it was 23-7, and we host a game in the NCAA tournament, which was an unreal experience for me to being able to host a NCAA tournament game. And we lost in the second round to Franklin Marshall. But the unique thing was we brought pretty much everybody back from that team that went to the second round.
When you get in, and I think as a new coach, right, and you're trying to build those relationships, and obviously over the course of your career, you've been at a lot of places, as we've already talked about, and we're going to talk about more. How do you go about when you first get in there? What do you do as a coach, or what's important to you in terms of building a relationship with the guys when you get to a new staff? How does that work for you?
I think the number one thing is having these guys feeling comfortable, you know, being comfortable enough to come to you. Because one thing about it, and, you know, as a player, when I played, I didn't go to my head coach for, you know, when I had problems, I went to the assistant coaches.
Right.
Because I felt like they could, they you know, they had the time in the day to talk to me about what I was going through. So for me is I'm a revolving door. Like, I want the guys to come talk to me about anything. It got to be about basketball. It could be about school. It could be about family, girlfriend stuff. So I try to get that rapport with them. So they trust me. I think that's the number one thing is when every time job I've taken, I wanted the current players to trust me, to know that I was on their side. But also too, I got my head coaches back, you know, but you know, you can come to me and I'm gonna try to help you as best as I can.
I think that, as you said, being able to build that trust to me is really important. And as an assistant coach, I agree with you 100% that when you think about from a player perspective, more often than not, those players, the head coach controls the playing time, and players know that. And so when they have questions about something that's happening, they're much more likely to go and have that little side conversation with the assistant coach about, hey, this is what's going on, or this is what I need. And they know the head coach has a ton of responsibility. So I think as an assistant, being able to sort of bridge that gap, right? You're sort of that communication middleman, for lack of a better way of saying it, between the players and the head coach. And I think the best assistant coaches are the ones who do that really well and are able to communicate on both ends of it. As you said, you made a key point where, yeah, you can be a sounding board for the players, but you also have to make sure that you're backing the decisions that are making that the head coach is making, right? It's like you can have conversations inside that coach's office, and then once you step outside that coach's office, everybody's putting on that united front and making sure that the messaging is the same. Even though you, as the assistant coach, may be the sounding board, you're still echoing the statements that your head coach is making and the things and philosophy that the head coach has out there for them.
For sure. For sure. I think that goes hand in hand, you know, and that's something to this day, like, you know, I'm always going to have my head coach's back, but also too, I got my player's best interest at heart as well too. So, you know, there's been times that I told my head coach, like, hey, you know, so-and-so is he got a lot going on, coach. You might got to back off him today, you know, right. And that helps him. He can coach him.
Hey, coach, want to take your team to the next level this season? Introducing Game Changer, the ultimate game day assistant with tools to give you a winning advantage. With Game Changer, you can track stats, keep score, and even live stream games, all for free. Get the stats and crucial game video you need to lead your team to victory, all from the palm of your hand. Coach smarter this season with Game Changer. Download Game Changer today on iOS or Android and make this season one to remember. Game Changer. Stream. Score. Connect. Learn more at gc.com/hoopheads. That's gc.com/hoopheads.
After 2 years at CNU with Coach Krikorian, you end up taking a job at Maryland Eastern Shore. So you get an opportunity to go and coach some Division I basketball. And we'll talk about, as we kind of go through here, just the differences at the different levels and kind of what your experiences were like. But talk about the opportunity at Maryland Eastern Shore.
Yeah. So, you know, my second year at Christopher Newport, we go to the Final Four. And, you know, it was a great year. I think it was 27-4. And, you know, one thing about it, when I met with Coach K, he asked me a loaded question. And I think this is something that, like, to this day that sticks with me is he said, what do you want from this? Like, what's your goals? And I told him, I said, Coach, you know, I want to be a Division I assistant. You know, I think I can go to that level. And he told me, he said, if you do what you're supposed to, you keep working hard like you are, like, you'll have a chance. So after that Final Four year, I had some opportunities, Maryland Eastern Shore situation came about, and I took the position there, and that's a, you know, going from Division III to Division I, it was a big jump, you know, in terms of, you know, Division III, you know, you can't do anything with the guys until October 15th. So, I mean, you got some time on your hands. I mean, you're recruiting, you're doing stuff for the program. Division one, I mean, you're working out. As soon as the guy's enrolled in school, I mean, you can work him out. Yep. So at the time, Jason Crafton, he got the job at Maryland Eastern Shore, and he brought me on. Also, he brought on Calvin Baker, who's a good friend of mine, and Larry Stewart, who's a head coach at Coppin State now. So that was the staff. And, you know, we brought our guys to summer school, so we're working out with them. I mean, day one, we're in the gym, we're working out with them. And, you know, just the one big difference that I saw with Division One is just how much time that they don't have. Like, we was in the gym or lifting weights or study hall. I mean, it seemed like it was like every other hour, you know.
Yep.
You don't have a lot of time on your hands on that level. So you got to be very strategic on the things that you do, you know, and that's one thing that I saw just being a Division I assistant is you got to be very intentional with your time. You know, you can't procrastinate for long because it's a lot of stuff that needs to be done and it needs to get done quick, you know, in terms of travel and working the guys out, scheduling, recruiting is a beast in itself. So especially on that level, I mean, it's key. You can miss out on a kid, you know, after one live period, if you're not talking or in talks with a kid, I mean, he you can miss out. So just learning that side of the Division I world was very, very good for me.
What do you think about that amount of time that you're talking about? Because I think back to when I played Division I basketball from 1988 to 1992, and things were completely different when I was a player. I always say that when my season ended, my head coach would hand me like a 2-page ditto and be like, "Hey man, here's your workouts. We'll see you back here in August." And that was pretty much it. And then you were on your own to kind of go do what it was that you were going to do, whatever that was. And obviously now, as you said, from day one, the moment those guys arrive as freshmen, they're already working out and doing this and that, and they got study hall and they got individual workouts and all the things that go into it. And I always look at it, and to me, looking at it from the outside, and I know there aren't very many coaches that would ever say, "Hey, we want less access to our guys." I mean, clearly that's not something that most coaches say. They're not like, "Hey, we want to work with our guys less." But part of me feels like, man, that's a lot of time for a coaching staff and 15 guys or 12 guys to spend together and not kind of, I don't know if burnout is the right word, but man, the grind of that has got to be, it's got to be tough. So I don't know just how you felt about that as you were in it, and whether or not we've gone too far the other direction where it's almost too much, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. I think this is the one thing about it too, is I think this is why a lot of kids transfer, because on the Division I level, like you have to be different. Like you have, your mentality has to be different.
Yep.
Like if you don't love the process, like you could get lost in Division I. And you have some guys that's just an elite talent and their talent can get them by.
Right.
But if you're just like a blue collar guy, you know, who works hard, like if you don't love the process, it can take a toll on your mental. Like, cause it's, you know, I know for me at Maryland Eastern Shore, you know, we wasn't great. You know, we had to play 14 money games, you know, so I'm going to just tell you an example of a week for us. We had to fly to Stanford. Then we had to fly to Morehead State, play them. And then we had to fly to Oklahoma. We played in 3 different time zones in 5 days, you know, so like, and we had to play all these money games and just, you know, we wasn't winning. So the psyche of our group, you know, it was in a bad place. I mean, you're getting beat. You know, we played Baylor when, you know, the year before they went to the national championship. I mean, those guys, it was unreal. But also, too, I think what it did for our guys is like once we got to conference play, you know, we felt like we could play with anybody. You know, it was like we was up at halftime against Oklahoma, you know, like so like that was the bright side. But, you know, to piggyback on what I was saying, I mean, it's you know, you have to love the process in Division I. Like if you don't love basketball, if you don't love getting better, you're gonna have some bumps in the road.
Just yeah, I still feel like it's gotta be a lot. And not just a lot for the players, but just a lot for the coaches and With a lot of the Division I guys that I've talked to, you know, they talk about how they, you know, divvy up responsibilities and obviously have a much bigger staff at the Division I level. So they're not hearing the same voice all the time and getting to look at different guys and whatever. But, man, I just think about how much of a grind my seasons were or whatever that 30 years ago. And then I didn't have that whole off-season thing where, you know, again, not that I wasn't working on my game because I was, but I always felt like, well, I don't have the same four guys chirping at me that are chirping at me for 8 months. I kind of go and do my thing and work on what I feel like I want to work on and get better. And so it's, man, sometimes I just wonder, is it, how much is too much, I guess, is the question there. And so it's tough.
Yeah, it is. I think the NCAA has to find a middle ground, and I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
But I do think it is a lot. It is a lot.
And see, I like now the Division III model, where previously, obviously, you couldn't have any contact. Now you guys get the 8 days, which doesn't seem like a lot, but I know from all the Division III coaches that we've been fortunate enough to talk to on here that everybody loves the opportunity. Of course, this year people were kind of experimenting with, hey, how are we going to use those days? And do we spread them out? Do we save any for after the season and all that kind of stuff? And so it's, I'm sure, kind of a work in progress figuring that out. But I feel like there's a fine line there, right? I think no days, no contact at all, to me, that wasn't good. But then I also think the Division I model is like crazy too much. So there's something in between. I think the 8 days for Division III was a good start. I don't know how you feel about it.
Yes, the 8 days was awesome. I know for us, the way we used it here is when you go on a foreign trip, you get 10 practices. So right. We kind of did that same model. And I think we did 3 days a week. I think we did like Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And, you know, we got on the court and, you know, we got a head start on some things. We had 9 freshmen come in this year. So it was really beneficial for them. So it was awesome. I mean, I think that's something that Division III should kind of keep. And, you know, a lot of these kids, they go to these places. They want to be worked out by their coaches. They want to be in the gym with their coaches. So, you know, I think that's that middle ground for Division III. I think it's great. I think it's something they should definitely keep on.
Well, it's hard too, because it's funny, the number of coaches that we've talked to and the way that basketball has changed in terms of how players go about improving and getting better. I think the further back you go, the more players worked on their game on their own. And there was less of, hey, I need a trainer, or hey, I need to be playing in a game with an official. There was a little bit more pickup basketball the further back you go. And so now when you think about, hey, a kid who is a Division III player, maybe they come to your school, and how much have they worked out on their own by themselves in a gym working to get better? How often, compared to maybe they were working with their high school coach, or maybe they've always had a trainer. And so now they suddenly set foot on a Division III campus and to not be able to have access to their coaching staff who recruited them. It just seems like, again, as you said, to add those 8 days to be able to get in and work with on both sides of it, the player getting worked with the coaches, and then also the coaches to be able to work with the players, especially like your freshmen when they first get there. Here you are spending all this time recruiting them, and then boom, they get on campus. You're like, oh man, sorry, we can't even see you in the gym. You gotta, you know, to be able to do that. It's kind of crazy when you really think about it. So I do think that 8 days is, I'm sure, made a huge difference.
Yes, it definitely did. I hope that's something that we can continue to have, because, you know, the one thing too about Division III is in years past, I mean, you had to recruit self-motivated guys because you couldn't get in the gym with them, or you're not supposed to,
right?
You know, so you got to get guys who are self-motivated. You know, if you want to be good and you want to stay good. So if you get a kid who's lazy, who needs some pushing, I mean, they're going to digress in the
right
in exactly. an off season. So, you know, so I do hope that we continue the 8 days.
All right, let me ask you about that last point that you just made. When it comes to recruiting, obviously an inexact science, but one of the things that I'm sure that you're looking for is, hey, is this a kid who puts time in, who works at their game, and are they going to continue to do that at the college level once they set foot on our campus? So how do you, as a recruiter, how do you try to evaluate that? Is that through conversation with people who know the kid, coaches, Do you look for something specific in what the kid says? Are you kind of looking at when you show up for to watch him at an AAU tournament or a high school game or a high school practice? Just how do you look for the kid who is going to continue to progress and continue to work? What are some signs of that you see, or that you have seen as a recruiter?
Yeah, I think the number one thing for me is I'm very intentional when I talk to him. I ask them key questions, but also too, I do my homework, because you know, when I was Division One, you know, you don't have as many days. At Division Three, I can go see a kid 50 times.
Right, exactly.
So like, I know a kid in and out.
Yep.
But when I was Division One, you know, I would have to call. You know, I would call the current coach. I would call their AAU coach. I would call their high school coach. I would call, you know, a buddy of mine who might have seen him, and I would get everybody's input. And like, if everybody was saying the same thing, it's like, okay, this, all right, I could trust my eyes. But if I'm hearing different stories, it kind of really helps me kind of, I back up and say, okay, you know what, let me reevaluate this, because everybody's not saying, and everybody's opinion is different. But if everybody's saying the same thing, like this kid's blue collar, he's a hard worker, like it's typically kind of true. So for me, I think that's something that I do now. I mean, the Division III, you know, in Division III, I can see a kid play as many times. And for me, and as Division III, I like to see a kid play really well to see how he's going to act. You know, if he has a so-so game, how he's going to act, and if he's playing bad. And the number one indicator, if a kid is the same in all three games, it's like, okay, that's, you know, he's for his team.
Yep.
You know, but if he has a really good game and he's like selfish, and then he has a bad game and he's like, you know, it's like, all right. So you kind of see, you know, and I think that's the beauty with Division III, is I can see a kid so many times, you know, and a lot of my Division I buddies will call me and say, Don, what you think? Because I know you've seen him a ton.
Right,
so,
exactly. Yeah.
You know, so I can give a good evaluation on a kid. But I think the more you see someone, the better you can kind of evaluate them. In Division I think you got to be very intentional with who you talk to. You got a lot of guys who are salesmen, you know, so got to be careful with that, and just, you know, finding guys that you genuinely trust, you know, teams that, you know, they might have played against, a coach that they played against. You know, I think that's another avenue that I use too, is talking to, it's a high school coach that I know really well. And as a kid, I'm recruiting now, and I called him, and he gave me his evaluation on it, you know, on him. So just finding people in the business that you can trust their evaluation. But also too, like Coach K always told me, just trust your own eyes, you know? So if you think somebody's good, you know, go further and evaluate and figure out if that player is good enough to be on the team, and if he fits the culture of the group.
When you're evaluating and you're looking at a player in context, whether it's with their AAU team or their high school team, are you looking for, in those two environments, are you looking for the same things? Do you have a preference for watching a kid AAU versus high school? Are you looking for something different when you see him with their AAU team versus when you see him with their high school team? Just how do you think about those two different environments? Because clearly they're not the same in terms of maybe the kid's role or just the coaching or just the atmosphere. So how do you compare recruiting or looking at a player in their high school situation versus their AAU situation?
Me personally, I love the high school situation. Just because, and I love AAU too. I mean, AAU is you can see a kid play against some top level guys, but a lot of these AAU programs, you know, they kind of just throw the balls out and just let them play, you know, and that's not college basketball. You know, like in college, I mean, you have to run a set, you got to have a team. So I love high school because I can really see, like, okay, can he play off a ball screen? You know, is he just, you know, can he read a screen? Can he see that he has to fade screen, or if he's going to come off this pin down, is he going to curl it? So I like the high school teams just because, you know, they typically run stuff. Not saying AAU teams don't, because some AAU teams are, you know, some AAU teams, there's some high level AAU teams as well too. But for the most part, I love seeing guys in their high school because, you know, they have to fit some sort of role. And it's, you know, some AAU teams is like, they just throw the balls out. So your kid scores 30 points, but he takes 50 shots. I mean, that's not college basketball.
Right.
In his high school team, he takes 6 shots and, you know, he's 40% or 50%. It's like, okay, that's more realistic. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's always amazing to me. And I remember when we first started the podcast, Dom, we talked to a high school coach here in the local Cleveland area. And he had a player who eventually ended up in his career playing Division I basketball. But at the time when this kid was coming out, he was recruited and he ended up starting his career at the Division II level. And so this is maybe fall of 2018. And this coach said to me, he's like, I never spoke to the college coach who recruited him. This was his high school coach. He's like, the college coach where this kid ended up going, never had a conversation with the high school coach. And I was like, what? I go, I really don't understand. How can that even be possible that that could be the case where a recruiter, a coach wouldn't want to talk to the high school coach? And then as time has gone on and I've had more conversations with various college coaches, and then I've also experienced it with my son, who's a senior this year, and his experience in AAU versus his experience in high school. And a lot of the college attention that he's gotten has honestly come through AAU, simply because he played with a really good AAU team that had a bunch of players that are going to end up playing college basketball. We had a great coach. And it's interesting to me that the number of colleges that sort of emphasize or look primarily at the AAU stuff, and where the high school has kind of been in some ways, I think, devalued. And you can kind of understand it from a degree of getting a chance to see a lot of players in one place at one time, and it can be more time efficient. But man, I'm with you that I would want to see the kid in their high school environment where they're getting coached all the time and they're in a role and they have to play in what looks more like a real game versus, as you said, in AAU. Even a lot of times, if your team is well coached, sometimes you're going against a team that isn't very well coached, and then that's not right. That's not realistic either, right? Because then they're going against a defense that isn't organized. And yeah, maybe I can beat my guy, but in a real game, there's going to be help and there's going to be adjustments and there's going to be things that are going to happen. How's the kid react to that? And sometimes it's hard to tell that in AAU. I just think you got to talk to a high school coach.
No, for sure. I think that one of the best things the NCAA did as well is in June, they added the 2 weekends of the live periods of the high school team camps.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's probably one of my favorite events now, because like I said, I mean, you can see a kid who, you know, they're probably going to run some, you know, legit offense. They're probably going to, you know, try to run a defense. So I love it. I mean, since they put that in, I think that's been brilliant. I mean, it's been really good for me.
All right, let me ask you about the difference Division I versus Division III, what you like about one versus the other, what you dislike about one versus the other. Just tell me about the two experiences and kind of where you're at in terms of your mindset as a college coach and with your career, where you're at right now.
Yeah, so I start with Division III. The one thing that I do like about Division III is I like that after the season, like, you can't do anything with them. And I like it because, you know, the kid can go out and get an internship. You know, they can go, you know, they can, I say, recharge.
Yeah.
You can recharge.
Right.
You know, you can do something to put yourself ahead in life. You know, get your internship, work a job, because ultimately the ball is going to start bouncing for everybody. You know, and I think that's one good piece, because since I've been in Division III, like, guys are like jumping at the bid to get back. You know, I do think that's something that is key in Division III. Division I, the one thing I love about Division I is I love how competitive it is. And honestly, you know, the big thing that I've learned about Division I is I think it's easy. Like, if Duke comes somewhere, it's like, oh, it's Duke or Kentucky. You know, I think you have to be very, very, like, you got to be very strategic in how you do things in Division I. Just because, you know, now with NIL, it's not a level playing field.
Right, absolutely.
So, like, you know, you're going to see who can really recruit in Division I. Because one thing about it, everybody has a scholarship. So it's like, what is going to separate you? And I know the facilities might separate you or whatever, but I feel like the best recruiters are the most personable guys, and they can find a way around that. And that's kind of one thing that I attempt to do. But I do like that, you know, for Division I. And also in Division One, I do like that they can work out year round. I think it's a little too much, but I do like the fact that, you know, you can work guys out and they can be around. You can kind of keep your eyes on the kid, you know, because in Division Three, you get your lazy kid, you know, in summertime, you know, he might put on some bad weight, right, you know, right. Like, so now you're starting back over, but at least in Division One, you can keep eyes on him and, you know, you can, you know, okay, he can regulate his body. Like, you know, you can kind of monitor his diet. So I think that's good. So I think that's the two big things that I seen from it that I would, you know.
From the coaching perspective, in terms of your role on a coaching staff, when you're at a Division III level, the staff is smaller, so you probably have more diverse responsibilities, whereas maybe in a Division I staff, things are divvied up a little bit more because you have more guys to cover more things. So from that perspective, would you rather have that more defined, and maybe I'm totally off base, but would you rather have a more defined role in Division One? And forget about it. Let's just say all the levels were exactly the same. It's not a matter of, hey, I'm coaching Division One, I'm coaching Division Three, but just thinking about kind of having your hands in everything and getting a chance to do it all, or dialing in on a more specified role like you might have in a Division One level. I don't know if that question makes any sense to you, but.
Yeah, it does. So like you said, like here at CNU, like I'm in charge of travel, recruiting, you know, my hands is in a lot. You know, when I was Division One, I was a recruiting coordinator. So my hands was in the recruiting a lot. The recruiting had to go through me. But also too, like, you know, we had a offensive coordinator, you know, when I was Division One. So like going into games, you know, I didn't really know what was happening.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
In terms of that, you know what I'm saying? So it was kind of, you know, and I felt like I could have gave some input, you know, but that wasn't my role. So I think the in Division One, that is challenging because, you know, most Division Three schools, it's your head coach. You got a full-time assistant. You may have a part-time, you know? So, but in Division One, you got a head coach, three assistants, ops guy. So like, you know, that's a lot of different egos, a lot of different perspectives. So just trying to mesh all that into one, it could be challenging. It really can, because you got, you know, guys who come from different backgrounds and different beliefs, you know, and it can be challenging. I know the staff I was on when I was Division One, I mean, we was very close knit. Calvin Baker, I mean, I just got off the phone with him before I got on here. So we still keep in contact, and he's at James Madison now. But I mean, we was a really close-knit staff, so we really tried to do it the right way and help each other out. But if I've heard stories of other staffs when guys are just nitpicking and, you know, you got to take my players, and, you know, it can be some divided on staffs, which I think is bad. And I think the players sense that. So I try not to be that. You know, I've always been a part of good staffs, and I want to be unified. And I think if you're unified, your players will be unified, and I think you can, you know, win games that way.
For Maryland Eastern Shore, you go to Guilford and then back to CNU. So talk a little bit about those two transitions, and then we'll dive into some more specifics about the program there at Christopher Newport under Coach Krikorian.
For sure. So when I was at Maryland Eastern Shore, COVID happened. And, you know, the world shut down. And I knew at Maryland Eastern Shore, the president said that no matter what happens, we're not going to have a season the following season. So, you know, I was just like, wow, like, you know, and Maryland was a great place. I was getting a little homesick. So one of my good friends of mine is Ronnie Thomas, who coaches at Longwood now. He was at Guilford and he called me. He said, Dom, I think I'm going to take another job. You know, I think I'm going to go to Longwood. You know, do you have anybody who you refer to Guilford? And I was like, myself.
There you go.
And he started laughing. He said, man, stop playing with me. I said, no, I'm serious, man, like myself. And it was unique because, you know, my mom passed away 5 years ago. And being from North Carolina, and Guilford's in North Carolina, I never coached in my home state. And with COVID happening, I didn't know what was going to happen with the world and college hoops. So I just took a leap on faith, and, you know, I said, you know what, I'm gonna go to Guilford. So Ronnie, you know, put in a good word for me at Guilford, and Coach Palumbo, He gave me an opportunity at Guilford. And I mean, it was unreal, because one thing I will say, you know, that one year Division One, it was tough. I was starting to really kind of question my love for it. And like, you know, I was thinking, should I get out, you know? But going to Guilford, it renewed my love again for the game of basketball. And Coach Palumbo, who's another defensive guru, he shared some things on that side of the ball that I haven't learned before. And, you know, at Guilford, they run a mover blocker offense. So I've scouted it, but never ran it. So being able to learn that and the pack line defense that we ran, which I never did until I got to Guilford, has been very beneficial to me and my development as a coach. And, you know, at Guilford, you know, it's my home state. So being able to recruit in my home state, where I feel like I have a lot of connections, and, you know, Guilford has reaped the benefits of that. I mean, they're having a fantastic season now. I think they're 20-2. I think they're fifth in the country. And I mean, that whole roster is guys that I recruited, and I couldn't be more prouder of those guys. But going to Guilford was great for me and great for my development. I got a chance to coach in my home state, got a chance to spend some time with my dad and my sister. You know, Sundays I'm driving home and hanging out with my dad, which I'd never done, you know, for my 12 years of coaching until I got to Guilford. So that was very big.
Absolutely. I mean, I think being home, there's clearly, I think, an advantage. And as you said, to be able to be close to your dad, especially after your mom's passing, I'm sure was extremely special for you. And then getting back to Christopher Newport, I'm sure that Coach Krikorian had a huge piece in that of just being able to go back and work under him again. But talk about the decision to come back to CNU.
Yeah, so you know, it was unique for me now, because you know I go home, I go to Guilford, and ultimately I meet my wife. So you know we Coach K, Jared Dyson, a good friend of mine. You know, he was at CNU last year, and he left to go to Army. And Coach K called me and said, "Hey Dom, you know I know you got a lot going on. You know, I know you're getting married, and I know all these different things. But you know, if you want to come back to CNU." You know, I have a spot. We'd love to have you to come back. And like I said before, you know, I got so much better as a coach under Coach K. And, you know, one thing about it, he gave me an opportunity, you know, because like I said before, I mean, you know, I got let go at Shenandoah. And then, you know, I got with him and, you know, I went to a Final Four. And it was a tough decision, just because I knew Guilford, what I was building there, is special, and they're having a special season now. But, you know, being able to go back to Christopher Newport, which is a world-class institution. And I mean, Coach K, you know, just was National Coach of the Year, won a national championship. And some of the guys that's on the team now are guys that I recruited before I left this the first time. So, you know, being able to come back and coach those guys and like I said, I love this place. This has helped me in my development as a coach, and being under Coach K again is awesome. And also too, Coach Roland Ross, he's been here 40 years, and he's like a father figure for me. So being back with him, it's been awesome. So
about, you mentioned it earlier, building a culture, and what makes the culture there at CNU so special? How do you guys put that together? How do you make sure that what you want from your guys in terms of their togetherness, your connection to them as a staff, how do you guys build that?
I think the big key is the upperclassmen kind of gives a blueprint to the underclassmen on how it's done. And like you said, like the two things that we're big on here is tough and together. You know, we feel like if you're the toughest group and your most togetherness group, that you can do some special things. And so the upperclassmen here, that's what they instill in the young guys. And they just move the baton, and each class kind of takes that on. And that culture here has been, it was awesome. I know my first time here, when I came the first time back in 2017, you know, just seeing how everything was ran, and like the upperclassmen, we didn't move on to the next drill until it was right. Like, you know, Coach K was like, "All right, next drill." They're like, "No, Coach, like, that ain't right. Let's keep doing it." you know, and I was just like, wow, like these guys are owning it, you know, like, and I feel like the best teams kind of take things in their own hands. There's so much you can do as a coach. You can't shoot the basketball for them. But when your culture owns stuff like they did, I mean, there's a reason why we went to the Final Four that year. You know, there's a reason Coach K's team last year, you know, won a national championship. Like these guys owned it and they made the best of their opportunities. So I think those are the two things here that we're big on is the tough and togetherness. And also, too, the type of kids that we recruit. You know, we want to recruit good character guys. You know, we want guys that's going to, you know, they want to be a part of something that's bigger than themselves. You know, and that's one thing that we do in the recruiting process is we tell them, like, we want guys like that. You know, we don't want guys that's going to come here and think they're going to score 50 points a game. You know, we want guys that, you know, they may score 8 points a game. And, you know, but they help us win. Like we want those type of guys to have that type of mindset. And you got to do some homework because a lot of guys they'll tell you what you want to hear. Right, but
exactly.
when you ask those tough questions, you know, then you can kind of filter through some things. So, but yeah, the culture here is really strong and it will continue to be strong. So
what has been the biggest challenge for you and Coach Krikorian coming off of the national championship? Because you think about, again, how good and connected that team has to be in order to win a national title. And I know you weren't there for that year, but obviously you got guys coming back that are a part of it. You're kind of stepping into that. So when you guys talk as a coaching staff, what are some things that you're talking about in terms of, do you have to avoid comparing this year's team to last year's team? Do you have to make sure that guys are continuing to understand, like, hey, this is what it took. We got to continue to do this. Just what are the conversations like about, hey, we got to make sure that we maintain what we did last year, but also not constantly compare this year's team to last year's team? Just what are those conversations like?
The one thing about it that, you know, we celebrated a national championship team, but once October 15th hit, you know, we was very deliberate in kind of what we was telling these guys that the train is going to move forward, you know. So, you know, you can live in the past if you want, or you can keep the train moving forward so we can try to win another national championship. So that's kind of been the things that we've been telling our guys. And it's been challenging because, you know, you win a national championship, you know, there's a bullseye on your back. So you're getting everybody's best shot. And I think it's been good. You know, if we're fortunate enough to make it to the NCAAs this season, you know, I think we've seen so many different styles of play that's going to help us. And we got some guys who's been there. So, you know, I think we have the experience. And also, too, you know, just the different teams we've played in Ohio. We've played against, you know, teams like Hampton Sydney, who's doing well. We played against a lot of different teams with a lot of different styles. So I don't think there's not much a team can throw at us that we haven't seen.
As you look towards the future of both this season and kind of where you're at in your career, let's talk about this season right now. And obviously we're not that far away from the NCAA tournament, and you guys get an opportunity probably most likely to defend that national championship. Going down the stretch here, what are some keys for you guys as you look at kind of where you are in your season?
The number one thing that we're telling our guys is pressure is a privilege. So like this is what you as a young kid, this is what you've been playing for, is these moments. It's February and March. So we just instill in our guys that pressure is a privilege, and that every day we got to be intentional in what we do. We got to look at the small details, and we got to remain tough, and we have to remain together because we're going to face some adversity. You know, like we have a big game on Saturday. You know, Mary Washington is a good team. So, you know, they're going to be out to get us. So just making sure that these guys see the big picture in terms of that, but also, too, just having fun with it, you know, like, at the end of the day, it's a basketball game. You know, it's not life or death. This is what we've been practicing for. So we got to enjoy the moment. And like I said, pressure is a privilege. So we got to enjoy this.
All right. Final two-part question. Part one, when you look ahead over the next year or two, what do you see as being your biggest challenge? And then part two of that question, when you think about what you get to do every day, what brings you the most joy? So your biggest challenge and then your biggest joy.
Yeah, so I think my biggest challenge really is that's a great question, honestly. I got to think about it a little bit. I think my biggest challenge is just figuring out, you know, like I'm married now. My wife, we're having a daughter.
Congratulations.
You know, thank you. Yeah, she's due in April.
Awesome.
So I think now just kind of, you know, life is changing for me. You know, like, you know, I could go take a job over here and do this and do that. But now, like, I have a wife, I'm gonna have a daughter. So, you know, I think now just kind of figuring out what's next for me and my family. And what's best to put us in the best spot to be successful, you know, as a family and things of that nature. So just kind of figuring out kind of what's next for me. You know, I have a large faith in God. I know God's going to put me in the right positions at the right time. So just believing in him. But I think that could be something that, you know, could be a little challenging. And what was the second part of your question?
Biggest joy. So when you think about what you get to do every day, what brings you the most joy?
Oh man, just being around these guys, you know, these guys are, they keep you young, you know, just being around them and just helping their development. And, you know, I think that's the one thing too, I got into coaching is really, you know, my head coach in high school, Kevin Billerman, he instilled a lot of confidence in me. You know, he believed in me. And I think that's something I want to give back to guys is just, you know, believing in them, knowing that they can be successful. You know, and, you know, one thing about it, it's tough in this world, you know, just, you know, it's tough. But having somebody in your corner and somebody that's giving you some confidence, you know, if somebody give you some confidence, man, you can do some great things. So being able to be around these guys and coach them and they teach me things every day, you know, on and off the court. So I'm definitely thankful for them.
Well said. All right. Before we get out, I want to give you a chance to share how people can reach out to you, connect with you, whether you want to share social media, email, whatever you feel comfortable with. And then after you do that, I will jump back in and wrap things up.
Yeah. You know, I'm big on Twitter. My handle is Coach Dom P. I'm on Twitter a lot. And also too, you know, email, is dominic.parker@cnu.edu. It's probably the best ways to get in contact with me. So those are two ones.
Perfect. Dom, cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule tonight to jump on with us. Really appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies. And most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.